Yes, you are listening to CFRO 102.7 FM here in Vancouver and at various other cable frequencies throughout British Columbia and Northwest Washington State. It's 9:01 and it's Thursday night, December the 3rd. And my name is Jerry Kowalenko, and we're here with another, we hope, lovely edition of the Arts Rational. And a little later, Megan is going to be telling us all about White Christmas, which is the big seasonal musical at the Arts Club. I'm going to be talking about the seasonal musical at the Playhouse, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. We have some arts notes. I just managed to pick up a list of the first big Film Critics Association prizes, which were handed out today. And we have some great music. And we have a terrific interview coming up with Steve Rosenberg and the star of one of the really great films in the European Union Film Festival currently running at the Pacific Cinematheque. And so we'll be back in a minute.
Are back as promised. You're listening to 102.7. My name is Steve Rosenberg, and here with me is Pooria Myrie, and he is the star of a terrific film, For a Moment Freedom. Good evening, Pooria. How
are
you?
Good evening. Thank you very much for having me tonight. It's a real pleasure to be with you tonight.
We're going to chat with you in just a minute about this terrific Austrian film. It is part of a collection of the European Union Film Festival, which is being held all the way up until December 9th at the Pacific Cinematheque. There are 26 EU films. The only country from the EU that is not represented this year is Malta. So you can see films from Cyprus, from Estonia,
Slovenia,
everywhere, places that and some of the subjects are quite interesting because Europe is a dynamic place and things are changing rapidly there. So as it turns out, we have one of my favorite films. It's not always the case that I get the choice to review to have someone from out of the 27 films. This is ranked as the top three by a critic in the Globe. And Pooria, you were the star of this film. Why don't we get started and talk a little bit about the subject of this film? It's about three different stories in the way that Babel was. So tell us a bit about how this story unfolds.
Okay, I will try to explain it correctly. It doesn't make sense. So there is three stories in this movie. I'm part of one. There is two young Iranian 20 years old, right? And our goal is to bring my two cousins, Ozzy and Arman, who are 7 and 5 years old, to their aunt in Austria, right? And so we are fugitives going from Iran to Austria. So we're going through the border of Turkey and Iran, so Kurdistan. And a lot of things happening between this trip, especially in Turkey, in Ankara. So yes, basically it's the first story. The second one is the story of a teacher and I cannot remember who was the other one. Yes. So, and the first story was, yes, a couple and with his child.
Yes, okay, so there are three separate stories, and they all interweave because these are three people that are three groups that wind up in Ankara, Turkey.
Yes.
And it starts, I guess, as a road movie in a sense, And you can see right from the beginning, it's this director has a beautiful eye, because it's breathtaking the way, you know, people leave Iran very secretly and go through the mountains and the snow pass, and the border is quite porous. Tell us about shooting in that circumstance. Were you actually in Turkey, or
Iran? Well, that was awesome. It was in Erzurum, in a ski resort in Erzurum. Was
Which
magnificent.
Country is this?
Turkey.
Okay.
Yes, it's magnificent. The weather was very cold. The snow was like we had 40 meters snow on one day, so it was very cold. The conditions were very difficult, but like it was so much fun between us. So yes, it's actually good times.
Let's talk about your particular story. So you are actually smuggling over two young children. You're acting with two very adorable kids.
Yes,
five and seven. These kids, I mean, I'm assuming this is their first acting job.
It was, yes. It was pretty difficult to manage them, especially for the director, because children have the last word, right? So if they don't want to make effort, they won't make effort. So especially with us two, like with me and Ali, the other actor, it was very difficult to manage them, but we had a really good relationship at the beginning of the shooting, and we had 2 weeks before starting shooting, right? Before the shooting starts, to meet each other. We went, because we were in Paris at this moment, we went out, we hung out with the children to make a good relationship before the...
So when you're acting with, you actually felt like you were their family.
Yes, actually, that's right, yeah. And that was the director goal, right? It was pretty fun.
You know, I watched this film and I wonder to myself, were all of these people actors before they were in the film? It had, you know, when you watch a documentary and you're seeing people actually in their natural surroundings where they're saying these words, and then you see a drama and you're thinking, I'm wondering if these particular actors are actually actors, or are they actually people that have been refugees?
Yeah. This is difficult to say, because actually I'm not a professional actor. A lot of the actors were professional. I was not. And I didn't have this experience of being fugitive, right? So I couldn't be in the skin of a fugitive. But the condition, as I said, the condition like minus... minus 10 degrees with horses in the snow, cold, with children in the hand. This condition makes the situation very hard, and we felt actually like fugitives, really. So it was not difficult actually to be a fugitive in this moment. Yeah.
Now this film is not a high concept film. It's a well-traveled story. Refugees that are leaving a country of oppression to find a better life in Europe, in countries that maybe
that's
would be
right,
easier.
Yeah.
And obviously when they get to those countries or on the path, there's a lot of devastation, there's a lot of tragedy.
That's right.
What do you think makes this film more different than most films of that nature?
Oh, I think there is a sense of humor used by the director, and he mixed that sense of humor with this tragedic story, right? This balance was really difficult, I think, to find.
Actually, I cannot say that
because I love the movie, but I am not in a good position to critic the movie. But and a lot of people have seen the movie and they really liked it, so I think he could find the balance. So that's maybe why.
That's right, and I think that's what makes the film so watchable and so heartwarming. There's a lot of humor, and I think the humor doesn't come from jokes. The humor comes from circumstances.
From circumstances, that's
and
right.
And I think
yes.
That's the best form of comedy. Yeah. I mean, you can easily have two jokes a page, and it'll feel like a sitcom. But this—that's
right.
This is very sophisticated. You're dealing with people that are really up against the wall, and it's difficult. And they're betrayed by their own people.
That's
often.
Right. One of the director tricks was we didn't practice before shooting, because he wanted to keep this natural feeling of actors, right? And he didn't want
so no rehearsal. You didn't have to memorize lines and go through them time and time with other
5 minutes before shooting.
Wow.
Yes, and because actually he wanted, especially with the children, with the kids, with the
once you rehearse it, you're going, but you there's a process in your memory that's blocking the,
exactly,
the natural
yeah.
performance.
And that's why, and it was so much fun for us, like especially for the humor scenes. That was so much fun that if we're laughing in the movies, he make sure that it's real laugh, like it's real, it's real sensation.
Authentic.
Yeah.
Puria, tell me, in terms of improvisation, did you have any latitude to make up some of the dialogue on your own, or did you have to stick to a script?
Oh, no. Actually, the director, so Arash Rahi, he gave us a lot of like freedom of playing, right? He didn't want us to be in a
following the words
and he of course he had a way to follow, but he let us a lot of freedom to play. Mm-hmm. So that was good. I really enjoyed the to play with those guys and the director. Yes,
I see. Now, the language of the film is, for the most part, in Farsi.
That's right. Because, like, the main story is like, Farsi.
It's an Austrian film.
It's an Austrian film, yes.
But it feels to me like an Iranian film. There's something very sweet about the children that you see in Iranian cinema.
That's right. And actually, it's because it's he's telling his own stories, the director, because this main part, like the two young people, they take care of the children, the kids, that happened actually to the director families. So that's why it's in Persian, because he has a Persian background as well. And otherwise in Turkey, because we met a lot of people in Turkey and they don't speak Farsi, so in Turkey, we speak English. Mm-hmm. So, for me, because my English was not very good at this moment of shooting, it was terrible. But it was good. I think people they won't have any difficulties to understand.
Well, it's a film that there's quite a bit of tragedy in it, but there's also they smuggled in the humor in the right places, and so I think that's what makes it balanced, and that's what makes it such an interesting film that we've seen these sorts of stories, but there's some kind of a charm that shines throughout.
Hopefully, yeah.
So you live in Vancouver?
Yes, I do now. I moved from. I had a visa to work and study here in Vancouver for a year. It was excellent, and now it's been 11 months I'm here, and you guys are really lucky to live here.
Thank
and
you.
When I say for a moment freedom of the movie, the real freedom is in Vancouver.
Well, thank you. Now tell us about the film plays on Monday.
So yes, the movie is played on Monday at 7 p.m. at
The Pacific
Cinematheque at Seymour, yes.
Yes, no, 1135 Howe Street. And will you be at the premiere?
Of course I will.
All right, well, it was a pleasure watching the film, and it was a terrific honor to meet you here.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. So, CBI's on Monday for sure.
Thanks, Steve. That was a terrific interview. Puria, we were talking beforehand, though, and I learned that you are multi-talented and wanted to quickly mention another project that you have going.
That's right. Oh,
so
thanks
go ahead,
very much
tell
for
us.
Mentioning it. So actually, I'm a percussionist, so I play Persian drums, which name is Daf in Persian.
Okay.
So we have actually, I have a band which is called the Vancouver Fusion Orchestra.
Okay.
And we have a concert at Chemic Center. It's in West Vancouver, the 18th of December.
Okay, excellent. And you're going to maybe send me some music, and we're going to try to play some of that next
definitely.
Week.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, excellent.
Just one more thing. For someone who, for your first role, and you have a starring role in this without ever acting before, I think it was an absolutely subtle performance and very believable, and I think you have a great future.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Priya, for being here. And now we're going to go to a little musical break. We've got lots and lots and lots of music coming up besides Priya's band. But one of the artists coming up to play is Brett Denon. He's from California. And so he's going to play the song Darlin' Do Not Fear off his album So Much More. He's going to be at the Commodore on December 7th. So have a listen to this. And that is the tail end of Brett Denon's Darlin' Do Not Fear off his album So Much More. And he will be in Vancouver at the Commodore on December 7th. So do check that out if you're interested. And lucky us, Jerry has been to the theater and is ready to share with us his most recent experience. Over to you, Jerry.
Well, yes, I have been to the theater actually quite a few times in the last week or so. But I'm going to talk about one of the big Christmas musicals, and I first of all want to say that I really, really love musicals. I like them whether they're on the stage, I like them if they're on a film, and I even like playing musical soundtracks on my stereo, you know? And I can remember as a little kid being out in the farm, you know, in between herding the farm animals, you know, singing and playing along on our family record player to various musicals that were big hits when I was a kid. And, you know, I mean, I didn't even know what that old line is about, you know, you can, you know, teenage, you know, what do you get when you get a teenage boy who loves musicals? I really didn't know I was out in the country. But yes,
Jerry,
I liked...
Already you're making me laugh.
I liked Oklahoma. I liked My Fair Lady. I liked South Pacific. I liked Gigi, you know, and I even admit I liked The Sound of Music, which was, you know... Most people with some critical taste usually leave that off their list of good movie musicals. And I must say, another musical I really liked way back when was the musical biography of the British and American stage actress Gertrude Lawrence, which was turned into a film called Star. Steve has never heard of Star.
Never heard of it.
Starring Julie Andrews. It's a film that almost caused 20th Century Fox, the studio, to go broke. Nobody went to this movie. It cost an absolute fortune. And it was even such a disaster, the musical Star, that they changed the film's name and tried to re-release it to recoup some of their money. But still, no one went to see it.
And the name was changed to what?
It was called Those Were Happy Times or something like that. And you can catch it and go to a video store and rent it. I think it was up for 7 or 8 Oscars at this point in time. But, you know, so I even loved Star. And, you know, and I like musicals, maybe not as much as Scott Ashton Swan, who's a local theater impresario. And he's the gentleman who produces the Applause musical series here in town, which people should check out. You know, I liked Urinetown, that theater bit at the Fire Hall. I loved Hello, Dolly. I loved Oliver when they were at the Playhouse. You know, Beauty and the Beast, Company, Funny Girl, Gypsy, all of those things.
May I tell you my favorite musical of all time? Of all time, Cabaret.
Really?
Yes.
I don't know what my favorite musical of all time is, but I love them all, Steve. I absolutely love them all. Into the Woods, anything by Stephen Sondheim. And, you know, I've even thought of going once again to see Thoroughly Modern Millie, which was one of the summer productions at Theater Under the Star, and it's actually going to be – it's the Christmas production at the Gateway Theater in Richmond. So – I do love musicals, and in fact, the only musical that I haven't really enjoyed in the last couple of years is The Drowsy Chaperone. Even though it's Canadian,
shocking,
it's probably...
it was a big Broadway hit.
Yes, it was. And it was Canadian, you know, originated in Canada. But, you know, and it was the big production at the Playhouse Theater last winter. And it was a gorgeous production, had good performances... A lot of work for a lot of really talented actors on the stage. But, you know, I think one of the things that a musical has to have is it has to have good music. And it should have at least one or two or even one singable tune. And I would challenge anyone to sing any tune that was in A Drowsy Chaperone. You know, and that's... What can I say? I didn't like The Drowsy Chaperone, and what it went on to do, it won the prize for the best piece of theater produced on local stages here in Vancouver last year. So what can I say? I don't have the same taste as everyone else. And so now we go to this year's Christmas musical at the Playhouse. It's directed by the new artistic director, who's a guy named Max Reimer, who was the director of A Drowsy Chaperone. And it's a play called Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I checked into its background. It was a musical on Broadway in 2005. It ran for about a year, 11 Tony Award nominations for musical theater. However, it didn't win. It lost out to Monty Python's Spamalot. Now, you wouldn't think Dirty Rotten Scoundrels or a title like that would be the title of a musical, but it is. And it's adapted actually from a film in 1988 with the same name, which starred Steve Martin and Michael Caine, though I did read that it was initially developed as a project to star Mick Jagger and David Bowie, but didn't. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, The film was reasonable at the box office, but the reviews weren't good. Halliwell's Film Guide described it as heavy-handed. And that's even a bit better than the film it was based on, which was a film from way back in the 1960s called The Bedtime Story with Marlon Brando and David Niven. And that film, way back when, was described by Britain's Daily Express as the most vulgar and embarrassing film made in 1964.
So not a good history to start
with. Not a great pedigree, I guess, you know, as a film or as a story. Now, all of them, Bedtime Story, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, the film Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, the Broadway musical, and the one that's at the Playhouse right now, they all have the same plot. And basically, it's about these two competing con men who work the Riviera, seducing wealthy, single, or divorced, or older women, and relieving them of their fortunes. So that's the story.
A gigolo story.
Right. I mean, it's been done a million times, and it's actually, you know, it's a pretty interesting kind of story. And as I mentioned, the version right now at the Playhouse is directed by Max Reimer, who's their new artistic director. It stars Andrew Wheeler as sort of the veteran con man, and Josh Epstein as his sort of rival upstart, and this new actress on local stages, Elena Huatko, as someone named Christine Colgate, who reputedly, or so these guys think, is the heiress to a giant soap and detergent fortune. And the Playhouse production of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels also features a live orchestra, an ensemble of really talented singers and dancers, and a musical score made up of some 25 songs.
How are the voices themselves?
Mostly pretty good. Although, and I'll get to it in a minute, one of the actors, you know, isn't really, you know, got a great voice, but, you know, he does try. But, you know, the thing about the 25 songs in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is there's not a one, and I love musical, that is barely singable or memorable. Some of them have names like Chimp in a Suit, Love is in My Legs, and The Ultimate, to watch in this production, and I do love musicals, is a number called Hotel Yodel, which features the dancers in the cast in, you know, full lederhosen, doing a bit of dancing and yodeling on the stage apron. I mean, and they're fairly crowded when they get up there, which is amazing with the Playhouse, which has this gigantically huge stage. And, you know, the musical...
Yodel with the... Again?
I'm sorry?
What's the song called?
Hotel Yodel.
Hotel
Yodel.
You can
go to the play and check it out.
Super and popular.
You know, the thing, and so the musical score of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels makes me really think longingly for the score of The Drowsy Chaperone, which was the play at the Playhouse last year, which really wasn't that musical.
I'm smelling a rat here.
Well, you're getting close. It has a large cast. I counted some 15 people taking a curtain call. And one of the other problems with it is the choreography. And I mentioned the Playhouse has this huge stage area for all the dancers and performers, far better than the Arts Club's industrial stage, Stanley Stage, which is a very narrow stage and is very difficult to get a large cast onto. But, you know, all of the singing and all of the dancing, all of these people seem to be crowding each other off the stage. They seem, in cases, lumbering across the stage. And as for the singing... Well, one of the leads is a guy by the name of Andrew Wheeler, who is really a terrific, terrific local actor. He's in Bard and the Beach. He is in all kinds of productions everywhere in town. He's a veteran of the local stage. But try as he might, he really doesn't have a very good voice. You know, he gives it the old college try. But, you know, he sort of sounds like... You know, remember Johnny Depp singing in Sweeney Todd many years ago?
Yes, that's when you want to believe in dubbing.
Right. Or, you know, or even going farther back, Peter O'Toole once played in a musical version of Goodbye, Mr. Chips. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Wheeler doesn't have a great voice. And what I find, I guess, a bit irritating about going to a play, and there's lots of actors in town who need work, is why not give it to somebody who knows how to sing? There are fantastic actors on the local stage.
It's a basic
Right, no?
I know. But, you know, so it's all a bit unfortunate, I must say. Not a nice evening at the theater for me. And that's too bad, because the girl who's in it, Elena Hwatko, who's very new, is fabulous as this little heiress who, you know.
There's a silver lining.
That's right. And the other person who is absolutely fabulous, and it's too bad he's in this play, is Josh Epstein, who's an actor who can sing, and he can dance, and he can also act the pants off absolutely everybody. Now, a couple of years ago, a friend and I were out at Studio 58, which is all the drama students here in town, and my friend Allison said, watching Joss Epstein, she said, this kid is going to make it big. And he has. He's now, you know, a few years after Studio 58, he's on Bard on the Beach. He had the lead in the producers at the Arts Club. He was the producer of a musical called Edges at the Hootspaw Festival. And actually, people can go see him, of course, in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. But he's also going to be in a big production at the Arts Club this spring called the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, which is a musical. So, I love musicals. I love virtually every musical that has ever come along. I didn't really like A Drowsy Chaperone, even though friends of mine told me that I was crazy. And I must say, I really, really, really did not like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. In fact, I think it would have been a much better play had they left each and every one of those 25 unmemorable songs out of the production. Mm. But as they say, you can check that out for yourself. I'm sure I'm horrified that Dirty Rotten Scoundrels will sweep all the local theater awards and then I will look like a complete fool.
Yeah, but that's theater. You never know what you're going to get. You could have all the things in your mind, you know, history of hits in other cities.
But, you know, bring back something like Urinetown. Bring back something like some of the great musicals that they're showing in town. And one of the nice things about going to the theater or going to an artistic event is even if you don't have a good time that particular night, you do know that there might be something great coming later. And in fact, I've heard from my various sources in the theater community that some of the theater companies here in town are trying to get the copyright to produce the Broadway musical Avenue Q, which is this adult musical featuring adult Muppets and which has songs like What Can You Do with a BA in English? The internet is for porn, and the other song is It Sucks to Be Me, which sound much better than every one of those songs in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
You see, I'm remembering all those three songs right off the bat, just
right,
by the title.
And they have great tunes, too. If you go pick up the soundtrack to Avenue Q, you'll absolutely love it. And so, you know, I may be wrong, but you can decide for yourself. If you have $50, $60, $70, you can go check out Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with Andrew Wheeler, David Marr, the fabulous Josh Epstein at the Vancouver Playhouse. It runs till December the 27th. And if you didn't like it and you've heard me, my less than pleasant comments about it,
call in and complain.
Exactly.
No. Well, I guess it's sort of I told you so. But anyway, that's all I have to say about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. But there are some great things in the theater coming up, and we're going to talk about them later on in the hour.
Thanks for that sunny review, Jerry.
Well, you know, I rarely say anything bad about any theater, you know, but this cost a lot of money. There was a lot of people on stage. And I mean, you know, when they sang that yodeling song out there on the edge of the stage, the hair on the back of my head stood up. And I thought, what in God's name am I doing here? But, of course, it'll probably be
a
big hit.
You're here to talk about it.
I'm here to talk about it. And, you know, it probably will win some prize for the best musical ever made in Vancouver. Well, what can you do?
Well, you're a survivor. What can I say?
I did see Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And you can, too.
Thank you, Jerry. That's going to be a tough act to follow, but I'll be back in about 47 seconds with my review of White Christmas. Be back soon.
What the Folk brings you the very best in world, folk, roots, and new music. Tune in every Sunday to CFRO 102.7 FM from 4 to 5:30 p.m. What the Folk, where we believe it's all folk music. It just depends on where your folks are from. What the Folk is part of CFRO 102.7 FM's Sunday Roots Music Programming. Tune in to What the Folk and hear the difference in listener-powered radio. CFRO 102.7 FM.
Should mention that. Megan.
Yes, Jerry.
We are listening to CFRO 102.7 FM here in Vancouver. CFRO standing for Community Free Radio Organization. And while we were on a break, we were talking about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and Steve mentioned the musical Altar Boys, which was a big hit at the Arts Club this summer. Mm-hmm. And you know,
you and I saw that together.
It had great performances. It was a great production. And it had a whole bunch of fabulous, fabulous tunes.
Mm-hmm. I saw that one twice, actually.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrel didn't.
So, Megan, now you've had a chance to take in some theater this week.
Yes.
And you saw White Christmas at the Stanley.
Right.
It's a classic Irving Berlin. What's your take on it?
So this is probably the Christmas play of the season this year, I would imagine. And let's see. I think one thing, just listening to Jerry's review and trying to think back, because he's probably a more critical theater goer than I am.
I love it all.
I know. Well, you do love it all, but you see it probably. You've got more theater experience than I do. And the one great thing about this was the music. It was memorable. It was catchy. And almost everybody would know at least the title song, White Christmas. And so it had that right off the bat. Just a little background about the story. It's a simple story about two men, Bob Wallace and Phil Davis, who are entertainers, and they, through a few shenanigans, end up in Vermont for the holidays. One of the characters is sort of a schmoozy womanizer, and the other is a shyer, more straight-laced sidekick type of character, and the two of them are in the entertainment business together. They end up in Vermont because the schmoozy womanizer one was following a couple of sisters and hoped to meet up with them in Vermont. And a few things sort of ensued, and what happened was they were faced with the task of setting up a Christmas show at this inn in Vermont. So that was basically the story, is them setting up a Christmas production. They're singers and dancers.
Sounds like a romantic comedy, is it not?
Yeah, exactly. So you've got these two sort of opposite men, and then the women sort of played similar types of characters, that one was a little bit more outgoing, a little bit sexier, the other was a bit more serious, a bit more reserved. And so you see that these two are naturally potentially going to pair up, and so that sets the scene for it. And that was kind of the story. It was a pretty simple storyline. I think what made it fun was the singing and the dancing, and I think that this play delivered. The musical delivered in that. The choreography was really sharp. I thought the dancing was exceptional. The singing was good. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say the singing was great. I read a review in the Globe and Mail, and they'd sort of mentioned that the women overpowered the men, and when I thought back, I think that that is a pretty fair comment. Sometimes the men sounded a little bit weaker on stage, and some of the women were sort of overly strong. So there's a little bit of an imbalance there, but the dancing was phenomenal. Big, big ensemble cast that all did a phenomenal job. And I think to me this is sort of that feel-good Christmas play, right?
So why do you think it's a classic? It's something that was probably penned in the 40s, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so, yeah.
So why does it continue to come back? What makes it a classic in your mind?
I think nostalgia is a big part of it, and this Christmas spirit's a big part of it. I went in and I left knowing that I hadn't just seen the most amazing piece of theater. It didn't really make me think about anything all that important, but it made me feel really good, and it made me feel like Christmas was coming, and it made me reminisce over all the Christmases of my past and look forward to this year. And
does it have a jazz score to it at all?
Yeah. Well, it's I don't, Jerry, you probably know his music a little bit better.
Well, it's Irving Berlin.
Like popular jazz.
And you know, the song White Christmas apparently is, I think, in the 40s, was the most popular song ever produced or ever sung. You know, people used to buy sheet music back then. So it's an incredibly popular song. Everybody knows it. In fact, we could probably all sing it here, but we won't. But, you know, Megan, what other tunes were in White Christmas? Are there any other singable tunes?
Yes, there's one about sisters. I think it might be called Sisters. Those are the two that were the most recognizable. White Christmas, as soon as the first couple of notes played, everybody, there were actually a couple of moments where they encouraged the audience to sing along. So everybody, everybody was encouraged to get into the spirit of it and participate. And but there were a couple of other ones that I sort of recognized. I wouldn't be able to list them off.
Oh, that's okay. But they were, you know, I mean...
I'm thinking of Bing Crosby suddenly. Is that his signature song?
Yes, absolutely. He made that song famous. He made it what it is. And his version is the one that we listen to every Christmas, that you hear on the radio and so on. And so... you say Bing Crosby, and you and I and anybody who's ever heard that song would have
And my father it. Always loved Bing Crosby, and my mother said my father always tried to look and act like Bing Crosby, but unfortunately, I guess he didn't have a voice.
Well, Megan, you have an edgy feel to your musical taste, so this is what I would consider a mainstream family entertainment.
Absolutely.
How does someone like you go into that, feel getting jazzed up about a play like that? I mean, I don't know that I could go to something like White Christmas.
Right. That's a fair question. I think it's all about the attitude that you take going into it. Just like I said, I left not thinking that I'd really been changed at all by this piece of theater. I wasn't thinking about it for days later, but I don't think that's the point. Mm-hmm. And I think almost everybody should be able to recognize you're going to see White Christmas, right? This isn't an edgy film, piece of theater. This is a nostalgic, heartwarming, touching piece of theater. And so if you go in with those types of expectations, I think you'll be reasonably satisfied. Mm-hmm. You'll feel warm and fuzzy at the end of
see,
it.
See, when you say warm and fuzzy, I have a problem getting myself to go to something with the right. Warm and fuzzy feeling. And also going to something that has been played for years and years. Unless,
yeah.
Of course, I was coming to see a revival, someone that's turning a play on its ear, reinterpreting all the music and, you know, turning it upside down and letting me
right.
see something in a different way. That's how I would end up at White Christmas. But at this point...
I would say for people who have those expectations for theater, this is probably not the production for you.
But you felt that the talent was there and the music held up?
Yeah, absolutely. It was... I was there for the whole time. I was engaged. I loved watching the dancers on stage. So anybody who's sort of into the whole dance thing that's going on with television shows like So You Think You Can Dance and loves to watch fun,
is it tap
energetic.
Dance or what kind of
there's
dance?
Some tap, there's some jazz, there's some sort of theatrical numbers.
Lederhosen?
No Lederhosen, I'm sorry, Jerry. Not in this one.
Austrian Lederhosen, right?
So, Steve, I think your question is sort of the main point of my review, is that if you want to go and have that feel-good Christmas mm-hmm. theater experience, this might be a good play. If you're looking for something a little bit more challenging, a little edgier, something that you say is going to sort of, well, challenging and edgier is probably the way to put it, this is probably not the one for mm-hmm. you. But I had fun, and would encourage people to check it out if you're interested, just sort of knowing what you're getting into. The run is, and this might be testament to how to the quality of it, it's already nearly sold out. It's got 44 shows that are pretty much sold out.
Wow.
If you want to try to get any remaining tickets that there are, the show goes until December 27th.
Wow.
It's at the Stanley Industrial Alliance stage, www.artsclub.com or 604-687-1644. It is a feel-good play theater performance, and it will put you in the Christmas spirit. And I think that's my take on it.
Well, thanks, Megan.
Thank you for your
honesty.
No problem. So should we check out another piece of music, and then we'll come back? Jerry, you've got arts notes and a little bit of a movie announcement, right? Film announcement?
I guess, yes. In theory. In practice.
Okay. So I found another artist, a Canadian artist who's coming to town in two nights to the Commodore on December 5th. This is Justin Nozuka with his song After Tonight.
There's something in your eyes. Is everything alright? You look up to the sky, you long for something more. Darling, give me your right hand. I think I understand. Follow me and you will never have to wish again. I know that I after tonight. You don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 no. Tell me how you feel, and if I'm getting near, I'll tell you where to steer. You tell me where to steer. Da-da-da, darling, way above the clouds and high above the stars. Through the unknown black holes, no one knows where we are. But we'll return to Earth and do it all over again. Cause I know that after tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. Come away with me. Come fly away with me. Just for one night, no one will ever know. No, no, no. Darling, I will leave you satisfied. Forever past time. You don't have to hide, you're free to fly. I know that after tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. I know that after tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you've been looking down upon it from heaven. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, no, oh, na, 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 na. Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, na, na, na.
Yes, and we are back with CFRO, Co-op Radio, Community Free Radio Organization. My name is Jerry Kowalenko. I'm here with the lovely Steve Rosenberg and the fabulous Megan Turnbull, and our guest, the star of one of the best films in the European Union Film Festival, running Monday night, showing from Austria. What's the name of the film, Steve?
A Moment for Freedom.
Right, okay. Now, before I get to a couple of arts notes, one of the things that brings great excitement into my sad, pathetic, lonely life is checking out to see which films win all the big critics' prizes for the year. And today, just before I came here, I thought, well, maybe check it out. And a group called the National Board of Motion Picture Review, which is a critics group in the United States, which has actually been around since 1908, so it's over 100 years old. They apparently initially were an agency that was involved in rating films for viewing audiences across the United States, and they got into a lot of other things, and in fact, they claim that they were the group that invented the 10 best list. Now, in 2007, they gave their top prize to the film No Country for Old Men.
I think that was your top pick as well.
Absolutely, and, you know, which went on to win the Oscar for best film. Last year, they gave their top prize to Slumdog Millionaire, which
was not my favorite film.
Well, it wasn't actually mine, but it wasn't bad. Anyway, it went on to win Best Film. So, awards for 2009 from the National Board of Motion Picture Review: Best Foreign Language Film, A Prophet, which is one of the films showing at the European Union Film Festival, at the Pacific Cinematheque. It was a big hit here at the film festival. A Prophet was, it's a prison drama set in France, all about religion, corruption, drugs, all those kinds of fabulous topics. A bit hard-hitting, very well done, and was, I think, the second prize, won the second prize at the Cannes Film Festival. So the National Board of Motion Picture Review gave it their best film. They gave their best director prize to Clint Eastwood for a film about Nelson Mandela called, I think it's Invictus.
Yeah, it's just getting released right now.
That's right.
I believe Matt Damon's in that one.
Mm. I think so, yes.
And Morgan Freeman. What's it called?
Invictus, about Nelson Mandela. I'm sure it'll be here in moments. Yeah. Now, the best actor, they gave a tie to Morgan Freeman in Invictus and George Clooney in a film called Up in the Air. Best actress, a real surprise. I mean, I thought it was going to be Meryl Streep playing Julia Child, but their best actress went to a woman by the name of Carey Mulligan in a film called An Education, which is a British film, which I saw, and I can't remember which one part she played.
She's the lead.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess best actress. And, you know, their prize for documentary went to The Cove. And their best film of the year was the film Up in the Air, which I know absolutely.
Well, you know, I think it hasn't been released yet. That could be why we all don't know
okay.
about it.
I think I've
it
seen a preview.
It might be this weekend.
It's got George Clooney in it. I don't know who else. I mean, one of the things about these critics' prizes is the big studios, because they want to get critics' prizes, and it'll lead them to get Oscar nominations. What they do is they release to the critics all of the films that's quite still haven't quite opened up in the theater. And for those who might be interested in this sort of thing, their top 10 films included An Education, of course, 500 Days of Summer, which is, I think, something you liked, Steve?
Mildly.
Okay. The Hurt Locker, about the war in Iraq. Inglourious Basterds.
Hated that film with a passion.
I didn't go. Invictus, The Messenger, which is a film I've never heard of, A Serious Man by the Coen Brothers,
terrific.
Which,
yeah,
fabulous
we
movie.
We both agree on that one.
Which won the prize from the National Board of Motion Picture Review for its script, Star Trek, the new version of Star Trek, and
done with sequels.
And the children's adventure movie, Where the Wild Things Are. So that's the National Board of Motion Picture Review. We will try to keep you posted here on the Arts Rational if you're into that sort of thing. I certainly am. But, you know, there's a lot of really great stuff, all kinds of fabulous art stuff that one can take advantage of or plan for. And one of the first things is the PUSH Festival. If you go online to PUSH Festival, you can get all the information of the productions. The PUSH Festival is an international festival of live performing arts. So it's got theater, it's got dance, it's got music, it has multidisciplinary stuff from all around the world. Absolutely first-rate stuff. You know, they say it's the way to deal with the midwinter blahs in Vancouver mm-hmm. in February. And it also, I guess, would be a good way of, you know, getting a break from the Olympics.
How long did you say it lasted?
It lasts for about 2 weeks. I think it starts January 20th and goes to about February the 10th. I think there's something like 16 productions on at various venues across town. And it really, it's got local theater companies, national theater companies, and international theater companies are coming to town, or dance groups, all of those kinds of things. A very good program. Right now, if you go online, you can get information about how to get reduced price tickets. I think you can get 6 tickets or 6 productions for $120. I mean, and the going rate for them will be between $50 and $60 each. So, the 7th Annual PUSH International Film Festival. You know, Steve, I love the Vancouver International Film Festival. I often used to live for the Vancouver International Film Festival and still do. But I must say, if I had to pick, I hate to say it, I think the PUSH Festival is the best thing.
Our very own Ellie O'Day, the publicist, will love you for these comments.
Well, that's great. And, you know, and other things people can take advantage of, there is the European Union Film Festival at the Cinematheque running right as we speak. Two of the best films are the Bader-Meinhof Complex, which is on tomorrow night. On Saturday night is A Prophet, and of course this lovely film from Austria showing on Monday night. Check the listings for the Pacific Cinematheque. I can't tell you what they are. There's fabulous films before Christmas. Su Saoxian's film City of Sadness about Taiwan. Great stuff at the theater all across town. Studio 58 at Langara, which is the best place that you can spend money in going to the theater. It's student productions subsidized by the taxpayers. And right now they're doing Shakespeare's A Winter's Tale, and apparently it's set in a campground in the Soviet Union. So, I mean, that's a kind of interesting concept. You know, there is a play running only for a few more shows after The Quake, which has been highly, highly praised as part of the C7 series. Colin Thomas in the Georgia Strait said it's a dream come true as a piece of theater. As well, coming up is one of Canada's leading playwrights, a gentleman by the name of David McIver, has a West Coast premiere of a play called A Beautiful View, starring the local actress and director Diane Brown, and Colleen Wheeler, who is such a fabulous actress that I could watch her on stage reading the dictionary. After Homelessness, which is this interactive play about homelessness, has been moved to New Westminster. What else can I say?
I happen to see it after Homelessness, and I must say it's a 2.5-hour production. You watch it once through with the actors. These are people that are actually homeless, and they actually go with David Diamond for a few months, and it's an incredibly moving performance, and then you'll see audience members interact with them as well.
Yeah, so if you check the listings, it's now moving to New Westminster for another week, and you know, the play, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? A live production is coming to Blackbird Theatre, and if you want to watch it on television, tomorrow night on television, Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton in the original screen production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which is an absolutely terrific film. And that's all I have to say. I have a lot of notes, but what the hell?
And you've cut it short.
Well. Thank you so much, Jerry. That was fantastic. And we will post your arts notes on our blog, which is www.artsrational.blogspot.com. So you can go and check them out. Whatever Jerry didn't fit in tonight, we'll make sure it's posted up there. And just want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you, Puria, for being here tonight with us. And best of luck with the opening of your film on Monday. This is the Arts Rational on 102.7 Co-op Radio. We're just going to go to a quick little break and then into our last song, straight into our last song for tonight. The artist is Shiwoniso. She's from Zimbabwe. Beautiful voice. It's the song Listen to the Breeze. So it's just a quick break, and then up with that song next. We'll be back next week. Thanks so much for listening.
The last bastion against the CBC barbarians, the longest-running classical music radio show in Canada, West Coast Classics. Rare and unusual classical music from all over the world, from 2,000 years ago to the present, all presented in its social and historical context. West Coast Classics, every Wednesday morning from 9 till noon on Co-op Radio.
Says child, it is a sign of wisdom to let go. That within your life bringing you burden. Take each day as it comes and each lesson it brings. Here is what I know. There is a part of you perfect and pure. A part of you that shines beyond this world. There is a part of every person you know. Troubles wash away. May your heart be the one to steer you on, daughter of the sun.
Victor Jara of Chile lived like a shooting star. He fought for the people of Chile with his songs and his guitar. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. Victor was a peasant boy, barely 6 years old, when he sat upon his father's plow and watched the earth unfold. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. When the neighbors had a wedding or one of their children died, his mother sang all night for them with Victor by her side. Her hands were gentle and her hands were strong. He grew up to be a fighter, stood against what was wrong. He learned of people's grief and joy and turned it into song. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. He sang for the copper miners and those who farmed the land. When he sang for the factory workers, they knew Victor was their man. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. He campaigned for Allende and he canvassed night and day, singing, take hold of your brother's hand, the future starts today. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. When Pinochet took Chile, they arrested Victor then. They caged him in the stadium with 5,000 frightened men. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. Victor picked up his guitar, his voice resounded strong. He sang for his comrades until the guards cut short his song. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. They broke the bones in both his hands, beat him on the head, tortured him with electric wires, then they shot him dead. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. Victor Jara of Chile lived like a shooting star. He fought for the people of Chile with his songs and his guitar. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome to episode 383 of the Better Days radio program. My name is Doug Lang. You're listening to CFRO 102.7 FM, Vancouver Cooperative Radio. We open with a song called Victor Jara of Chile, written by the son of Woody Guthrie, Arlo Guthrie, sung by Christy Moore, the preeminent folk balladeer of Ireland. And today, well, today has almost passed. It has in Chile. But also tomorrow and Saturday, there is a funeral for none other than Victor Jara. After all these years, of course, you may know that he was murdered in the original, as a result of the original 9/11, in the days after the Pinochet coup in Chile, the murderous overtaking of the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende, the U.S.-backed coup, I should mention. And, of course, Victor was one of the people rounded up into the stadium in Santiago, and he was singing and had his hands broken and was eventually shot. And as it turned out, he was buried, as I understand it anyway, without a marking. Let's put it this way, a cruel grave. Unsung, you might say. So, over time, his remains were found, identified, and exhumed, and examined, and it was determined that the cause of his death was multiple traumatic blows and multiple gunshot wounds through most of his body. And when this identification was verified, and his remains returned to his family, it was determined to finally have a funeral and give Victor a dignified grave, and that is going on right now. I have the website where you can actually watch it live. It's a little hard to get on at times, not right now, because it's the middle of the night in Chile, but during the daytime, over the next 2 days, if you were to type Victor Jara funeral, you might come up with that website, or go to Facebook and search Duke Lang and find the website on my page there. Okay. Anyway, it's a remarkable event, emotional, of course, for especially the people of Chile and those of us who care about such things. It's a wonderful day. There's Christy Moore to open the show. We'll talk about some other things related to that, and I'm going to play you some Victor Jara later in the program, a little set of a few songs. They'll be in Spanish, but there's the record I have, Manifesto, his wife, Joan Jara, who was born to the English language, offers a few moments of translation to help. Okay, I have such excitement today because the second edition of a book that I edited along with Pam Woodland has just come out. It's called The Tugwell Years, The Selected Letters of Barry McLeod, 1978 to 1986. And it's out in a proper book form now. The first edition was more like a Sirlock's binding, 100 copies meant for friends of his that he didn't write letters to, those who lived close enough to him that he could see in the flesh, daily round of the real. So, to have this book in a proper book form with new photographs and a new introduction by James R. Page, my friend Jim Page, is a wonderful thing. It's available through Harland Press, and I think it reaches out beyond the sphere of his friends quite well. In fact, a lot of the issues that he talks about in the book remain pertinent today, which is probably a sad commentary on our progress as a race, but yeah. And it's not the most political book, but McLeod was definitely a political individual. Interesting guy. Anyway, I might read something from that tonight as well. I got lots of music for you. It's going to be fun. A big shout out to all the Handy Dart drivers who are on strike right now, who have a big day tomorrow when they get to, some of them will be chosen to speak at the TransLink meeting out in the Metrotown area, and yeah, lots to talk about. Right now, I just want to start this next set with a song from Butch Hancock right here on Better Days, episode 383. Stay with me.
I stand before with wide open eyes to tell you things about yourself you might not recognize, like how we fight for love or money and how we fight for fun. Spoken circles and tongues while the boys all fought for you. We thought you were all beauty and truth. Now I see you thought so too. You told us time and time again the best is yet to come. But the more you talk, the less you all of the damage done. Born and bred to push your luck out to the edge of town. Over unmarked graves you swore to try to live your legend down. Headlong into battlefields you broke into a run to take part in and be part of the damage done. Desert shields and dirty deals and dim lines drawn in dust. Send a half a million men to save some oil in the sand. My God, in cars we trust. But the worst is not the body count, nor battles lost and won. It's in the hearts of those who fail to feel the real damage done. Desert storms, a call to arms, call it what out from under God with justice standing still. Noriega, North, and Nixon now, like father and like son. One steps aside, one steps right in to carry on the day. Playing with war toys turns into a full-time occupation. I guess the less said, the better about a kinder, gentler nation. 'Cause once you've tasted power and blood, it's easier to aim your gun and fire away and walk. And oil stains our hands. Soon we'll have a mighty pipeline flowing across Afghanistan. One day in hell, two towers fell. What's lost can never be won. By war on war, adding terror to the damage. I'm gonna lay down my burden.
Sandinista. You can hold your head up high. You have given back their freedom. You have lived up to your name. Sandinista, may your spirit never die. Hold the candle to the darkness. You're the keeper of the flame. Sandinista, keep it.
We opened that set with Butch Hancock from War and Peace, a wonderful record of his. We did a song called The Damage Done. And then from Olabel, the one with Levon Helm's daughter in the band. Beautiful thing. From Riverside Battle Songs, we heard Riverside, their arrangement of Down by the Riverside, a kind of a reinvented song in their hands. And then from The Pilgrim, a celebration of Kris Kristofferson, Patty Griffin's contribution to that album. It's 10:23 here on the Pacific coast of Canada, a country that's apparently hard to get into if you are a journalist from the United States who might be capable of saying something that doesn't flow in the same direction of the political river surrounding the Olympic Games here. Amy Goodman was held at the border for an hour and a half, and her traveling companions had their laptops and belongings gone through, and Amy was interrogated for quite a while. I'm sure a lot of you are aware of all that. And of course, it makes you wonder, why in hell would border officials be concerned with such a thing, and why would they infringe upon a person's right to travel and speak freely in this country? But they did, and what agenda lays behind that? I think each person has to decide for themselves. But it certainly has garnered a lot of international attention all of a sudden, as Amy, of course, spoke of this on her well-viewed and widely viewed webcast, Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, and it's got what they say, it's got legs, this story. And of course, now the everything to do with the border control is not issuing any statement. We don't discuss individual cases, the female spokesperson said. Anyway, well, and this is only December, and when the games come, or we're nearer to the games, who the hell knows what's going to happen at our borders and in this town, as the entire downtown area will be shut off to traffic. You'll have to take public transit to get here. I can see the cattle drives now as we try to get a ride downtown. I'm going to have to do at least two shows, I think it is. I'll have to check the dates. We're going to have to get downtown somehow from where I live, and hopefully at that time of night the buses will be working, so, and I'll be able to get down into the sort of the green zone of the Olympics, as 600 plus blocks of the downtown core of Vancouver will be completely shut off to traffic, and I'm sure will be well guarded. And I hope I don't get arrested for playing music. Anyway, it is something else for sure. Buffy St. Marie has been an activist, singer, songwriter, Native rights spokesperson, First Nations spokesperson all her life. She's written some of the most dynamic social commentary songs there are. But one that really has embedded itself in the public consciousness is one of her earliest songs, one that I think Donovan had the most attention for, but Buffy wrote it, of course. Here she is anyway, right here on Better Days on CFRO, singing Universal Soldier to start this next set.
He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist, and a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA, and he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the walls. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon to the war. And without him, all this killing can't go on.
He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. But his orders come from far away no more. They come from him and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end to war.
Tell you a story, my friend, from the Vietnam days way back when. Body counts mounting on the wall, you had to do something about it all. That's when the singer took a trip up to Washington State. It was a good day to travel on the interstate. Two hitchhikers, all of 19, traveling real light with their heads shaved clean. Singer picked him up, he had room in the car. He says, I'll take you where you're going if it's not too far. We're going up to Canada, they said, it kind of slow. Seems like the place to go. Now you can trust a stranger if you give him a chance, and there's a million stories in a sideways glance. The singer knew he had a long range view. I'm only going to Seattle, but I'll see what I can do. The interstate's a long, straight, blacktop line. You can do a lot of thinking while the time unwinds. Leaving California for the evergreen land. Pretty soon the singer had a plan.